You know, there's one example of a girl who wrote her name on a mirror in the bathroom in rubbing alcohol and then lit it on fire. That was a trend. Well, unfortunately, the fumes of the alcohol, rubbing alcohol, basically ignited. It was like basically she was inside a alcohol vapor chamber in the closed bathroom. Everything ignited, including her clothes. And she, you know, has had serious burns with multiple surgeries. And unfortunately, was probably going to be disfigured from following a trend.
Dr. Brian Boxer-Wachler, it's good to have you on here. I almost didn't want to have you on here because I don't know if I want this information, but then I know I have to get this information.
I like demanded, pleaded, called God on promises and was like, you have to show up or like I am done. And he did. And he did.
That's something to really think about. What does it mean that the God of the universe loves me?
Are we saying our God is bigger than their God or what?
Man, you got my mind going crazy right now.
I just think that that is evangelical bullshit.
And I don't fit in their box anymore. So feeling rejected from the church makes me feel far away from God.
If I'm living out the love of God, love of the divine, then in some ways we're unoffendable.
It's wrong to marginalize anybody for any reason.
Sometimes we can just have some things about our perspective that's off until we encounter someone who can challenge our thoughts, have conversations with us, and we just continue to grow and evolve.
I got with you there. Yeah, I like that.
That sounded like womp, 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 womp to Robbie.
I'm a hardcore gospel lover. I do love the gospel. I just think we get it wrong.
Girl, I was so highly medicated, I don't even know if you
Oh, God, my people.
You wrote a book on what we're about to talk about. You're one of only two influencers worldwide to be selected as a member of the Advisory Committee for Identifying Credible Sources of Health Information. I won't go on and on, but it's legit stuff here. You are starting this whole posture of taking a look at social media by looking at yourself and the sort of habits that you are involved in, which I think is incredible. I think more people are apt to listen. Why don't you give us a little rundown of the situation you found yourself in with social media?
Sure. And, you know, thanks again for having me on your show. So first, you know, I wrote my book Influenced as a 911 call to action for people about social media and for parents regarding their children for social media. I'm a Beverly Hills medical doctor. My specialty is keratoconus, an eye disease.
What's that by
affects,
the way?
It affects the cornea, the outer lens of the eye that gets weak and bulges out. And actually pioneered a number of procedures to even prevent people from needing cornea transplants. And I have 3.5 million followers on social media. But I also have a flaw in that I myself became addicted to social media. So if this could happen to me, then it's very likely it can happen to a lot of your listeners, a lot of their children and teenagers too. And that's why I took it upon myself to do the research and also be transparent about my own experience so that I could show people the tricks and the tips to avoid the problems that I had. And I'm a parent. I have teenage daughters, and I know a lot of parents also feel like they're losing or have even lost their children to their phones right now because of social media, and it's really difficult for them. And I understand it. I get it as a parent too. And that's another reason why I wrote my book Influenced.
Yeah.
To really
hey,
help
real quick,
parents.
I'm curious if you don't mind disclosing, are you like the best cornea doctor ever? 3.5 million followers. As a doctor, how'd you end up with all those followers?
It actually had nothing to do regarding my specialty of keratoconus. It really had to do because during the pandemic, my daughters had said to me when I had a lot of unexpected downtime, they said, Dad, there's some really good doctors on TikTok. And if you're interested, you know, we can help you and get started. And I said, well, sure, you know, I'm open to it because they thought I'd be really good at it. And so I quickly saw and observed that there's a lot of videos that go viral on TikTok and social media in general that have false health information or misinformation about health trends. And I started calling them out. And that's where I was really filling a need, a huge need, actually, for people on social media because they didn't know if they could trust the videos. And some people were. And so I kind of filled that gap. And that's what led me to really sort of explode to, you know, 3.5 million followers now, two and a half years later.
Well, tell us about your research and how'd you go about it? I guess you're good at that kind of stuff because you have to do that sort of thing for your position as a doctor, but this is outside of your professional work.
When I started, I became very enamored with the idea of growing my platform. The addiction is where it sort of took hold of me because I became so obsessed with growing. I mean, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and find I had like 20, 30, 50,000 new followers, you know, which is incredibly exhilarating. In our brain, it stimulates this neurochemical called dopamine. And dopamine is the same feel-good hormone in the brain that's responsible behind gambling, drugs, and sex addictions. And so it's the same thing with social media. It just gives you that huge shot of dopamine. And even people that are just using social media like Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, you know, they keep scrolling and you just don't know what that next post is going to be. And it could be a really good one. It could be a dud. And it's the unpredictability is why it became so addictive for so many people, including myself, just like the slot machines. Same thing. It's the unpredictable nature of it. And psychology studies have, you know, found that out about slots and gambling a long time ago. So there I was, you know, wanting to grow my platform. I put certain benchmark goals like, okay, I want to hit 10,000 followers. And when I got 10,000 followers, you know, I said I'd treat myself to a brand new iPad that I would work off of. And when I got to 100,000 followers, I would, you know, take my kids on a trip to I'm in Los Angeles. My practice actually is in Beverly Hills, but I would take my kids to this little island off the coast of LA called Catalina.
Yeah.
And so I kept setting these benchmark goals, and then it was 1 million followers and, you know, beyond. And that became the obsession for me to the point that I actually, without even knowing how damaging it was becoming to the relationship with my family, like starting to pretty much put my social media role as an influencer above my real relationships. And that's where it really
caused a lot of stress. Did you start picking up on that, or you said it was kind of unbeknownst to you?
Yeah, unbeknownst to me. So in fact, you know, my kids would be giving me like looks and reactions and saying stuff, but I just kind of didn't even pay attention. They would even come home now as teenagers, telling their parent about their day is already a rarity. But they would try to be talking to me about what happened, and I would be on my device, just focused on my activity as an influencer and just almost not listening, you know, just one ear in the conversation. So it really came to a point, and it was starting to, you know, put some stress on the relationship with my wife as well, who was supportive incredibly through the process, but she's human too and can only take so much. So they eventually literally had a TikTok intervention sit down with me.
Who all
but
was
even
there?
At the And even at the time, I actually was in denial. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Like, I'm overdoing it and it's causing these things with you. Like, you're not supportive of my goals. So, you know, again, that's kind of what an addict for anything, you know, doesn't have insight at the time. Eventually, I did get insight, you know, had a real, you know, meeting of the minds with myself to realize, wow, I had actually really been neglectful of my family. And then apologized to them profusely and came back to social media after having a bit of a break with a newfound perspective and a healthy perspective for how to balance it.
And at the height of it, how long did that last? Like when you were at your peak use, did this go on for like a year, you think?
I mean, it had been getting more and more and more and more, like probably over the course of a year or even, you know, year and a half, actually.
I mean, it's interesting to think, and I want to get into some of this with you, but how it seems like one of the bedrocks of why this thing is going so crazy is because typically as parents, it's our role to pass on to our kids the things that we learned, things that we're educated on, and we're not. Like we're in the same boat as they are. We have a little bit higher functioning just from an intellect, but we don't have the social media experience or knowledge either. I mean, is that what's magnifying the situation that we're in right now?
100%. Because when we were young, like we were taught, if the stove is hot, don't touch it.
Exactly.
Well, social media is like today's stove for kids, teenagers, and adults too, for that matter. But we don't really have the instruction on how to avoid burning ourselves. And that's why, you know, kids and teenagers are incredibly more susceptible to the effects, the adverse effects of social media because of their brain. In fact, in my book, Influenced, I have a whole chapter called Easy Prey, why kids, teens are so susceptible to these influences and what's behind that with their brain development that's still in progress until, you know, about age 25 and what's happening there, and examples so people can relate if they're parents. So, but yes, that's exactly. And that's one of the reasons I actually did take the time to do all this research and be open about my own experience to write the book.
Yeah.
Right. Because the book was really, there's no book that's like this from, especially from somebody who is an influencer, like a bona fide influencer.
Right.
Kind of opening up, you know, what's behind the curtain. From personal experience and insights, because there's no resource and there's a big need for the and that's why the book has been received so incredibly well. And I'm very grateful for that too.
Yeah. So guys like you and I, we understand the before and after of the internet. And sometimes it's really hard for me to even imagine so I have a 16 and 14 year old girls, and then I have 12 and 10 year old boys, and not a one of them understands what the world was like before cell phones. And I can't imagine what that feels like to never know anything else. And I hate this mentality, but I think a lot of us, we look at history and we say, okay, cable TV, our parents' generation is probably like you're rotting your brain, you sit down all this time, you know, Nintendo comes out, you're not outside enough. Why is this one a real deal game changer that's kind of different from anything else we've encountered?
Social media is everywhere now. Most people have social media. And for the rare people who aren't on any form of social media, they certainly know people, friends or family who are. So it indirectly impacts them because of how it impacts the people who they know that have social media. So yeah, it's not going away. It's actually only going to get bigger and even more sophisticated. And, you know, the apps are also designed to make us addicted and spend as much time as possible on their platforms because that's value to them. And so we need to learn how to manage it and balance it. And again, especially for parents, it's so critically important because there's so many examples of teens and kids who have really gotten into bad situations, even harmed themselves. There was one study that got published that the 30% of people who are on Instagram who accidentally stumble upon a self-harm post of somebody who was harming themselves, and they stumbled upon it accidentally, they weren't seeking out self-harm videos, 30% of them actually went ahead and harmed themselves because of what they accidentally saw on Instagram. 30%. And that's a shocking statistic. And so again, young people's brains are so much more susceptible because they haven't developed the critical thinking skills and higher level functioning in their brains to be able to process and understand what they're seeing without getting easily influenced so, you know, quickly. So that's why we see such a huge statistic. And, you know, if we talk about teenage girls with, you know, Instagram and TikTok, a huge percentage of them develop, you know, what's called body dysmorphia, where they're just so focused on their bodies because of watching other people posting about themselves. Oftentimes they're, you know, these posts have filters that make people look, you know, better than they are in reality. So it's setting these unrealistic expectations. It's like taking like the old magazines. Well, not old, but they're still around, like Cosmopolitan and In Style, or, you know, all those fashion magazines. But it's now you've just amplified it because they're accessible. The effects everywhere. Are accessible everywhere on people's apps on their phones now. Whereas
The
past, if you had a magazine and you didn't have it, you couldn't see it. But here you can see it constantly.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's always been a problem, but the internet magnifies everything. But it did just make me think like it used to be. It was only the celebrities that had access to that sort of makeup job on the cover of magazines. But now any of us can put on some filters and have those same advantages. I mean,
And I've posted videos on my, both my TikTok and my Instagram, you know, showing how it's almost like filter on the wall. Who's the, you know, most beautiful of them all. Kind of pointing this out and showing how filters, there's one video I actually do edit or reacted to of a woman who used this filter, and you see the video of her with the filter, like totally morphing into something totally different because of the filter. You could just video of her doing the filter and you see everything just change as she's adjusting various things in the filter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really why teen girls specifically are so affected by this and put so much undue pressure on them like we've never seen before. You know, there's a chapter in the book called Living with Social Media that really helps people with the tools for themselves and also for parents to help manage this better for their kids.
Yeah. I heard someone say this and it really opened my eyes to where I would go to school and I actually had a situation to where I was picked on and bullied. Well, I come home to the safety of my own home. Nobody has access to me unless they live in the neighborhood, but obviously they have to knock on the door and confront my parents or my brother. Whereas these kids, if parents aren't vigilant, they can always be accessed by people up to no good. We hear the horror stories, and I've even seen it depicted on movies where a young guy is basically lured into a chat with a woman, you know, a girl that says that she's interested in him. And the whole time it's bullies picking on him. And then they expose the chat to embarrass and ruin his life. Like, how common is this? Because that's like at the very least, that's a year ruiner. Like that can just ruin someone's whole year at that age. Worst case scenario, it could actually lead to suicide. I mean, is this a common bullying thing, that sort of story that I outlined?
That's probably, well, first of all, bullying is very common and has some very serious effects, including, like you said, suicide because of being bullied online and social media. That sort of ruse that you described, I'd say is, you know, I don't know the commonality of it, but I would say that's probably less common than just overt bullying of people with comments. Somebody posts something, you know, and maybe somebody's a little overweight and then, you know, that person is starting to get all these hateful comments and bullying. You know, that can be devastating for a teenager, you know, who's mind is and psychological status is fragile, and that can tip people over, you know, in a very dangerous way. And people have harmed themselves and committed suicide because of bullying. So like one of the tips in that chapter I mentioned before called Living with Social Media in my book is that don't engage with a bully. You know, if a bully is hammering on you or trolls are hammering on you, just do not engage because you will never win. Right. Because they have one agenda and it's not like a civil debate, you know, in the town hall, like you're not going to convince somebody who just has one agenda. So the best thing is to just not engage in a bully. That's one important strategy.
Yeah. I want to go down the list. I won't be able to get to all of them because I actually have some other questions too. But one of the recommendations is setting limits on social media. And I just wanted to know what in your mind is a good limit? Like through your research, what'd you find?
It really is case dependent. So, you know, for some people, it might be 15 minutes. For some others, it might be an hour, depending on what they have going on in their lives, what responsibilities they have. You know, for students, I think no more than a half an hour or an hour tops.
On social media, not necessarily screen.
Social media, right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So, and you can set limits on the apps and even on your phone so that it will shut down. And it does give you the option to override it, and you have to be diligent and say you're not going to override it when it pops up. But sometimes you can actually put a password in and scramble the password so you don't even know. And then you can never override it in that case.
Did you do some specific research? Like you talked about TikTok. A common thing that I get from my girls is with Snapchat in particular. Mm-hmm. This is how we talk to our friends. Like it's not necessarily a what I'm accustomed to, posting a picture on Facebook and seeing what people think about it and how many likes, but it's more of a messaging back and forth sort of deal. And honestly, you know, I talked about this is parents' first rodeo too. Like I don't get to go to my parents and say, hey, what'd you do with me and my brother when it came to, you know, social media? We just don't have that. And so the thing that I get from my daughters is this is how we socialize. All of our friends are on here and I look and there is chatting back and forth, but should there be even a limit of like, so let's just reduce it to texting. Like what if our, you know, you have daughters, I have daughters. What if our daughter is literally texting back and forth with a friend for an hour and a half, just like you and I or our sisters may used to talk on the phone to a buddy for an hour and a half.
I mean, I think that's an important consideration because if you're finding as a parent that it's interfering with them being able to get their schoolwork done and they're staying up really, really late at night into even like early morning hours, then that's a sign that they're probably spending too much time, you know, just with their phone in general, like, because you're right, with Snapchat is how a lot of them do communicate. And so you have to sort of be mindful of like how late are your children staying up and, you know, how much are they using their phone at night? And sometimes you have to take the phone away at night and say, you know, you'll have it back, you know, in the morning because you have more important things you need to make sure that get done. So at the end of the day, parents are still the grown up in the room. And the best way, and research has shown this, for parents to monitor and modulate, most importantly, their children's social media use is to join the apps, create an account on your own phone as an adult, as the parent, on, like, let's say TikTok. A lot of adults are on Instagram and more are on TikTok too. But if you're not and you don't have an account, join the apps because you want to kick the tires. You want to look around, see what it's about. But then you want to go with your child together, look at their account on their phone and see who are they following. And as a grown-up, you can really see those accounts and see what type of videos they have and see if they have good influences. On one of my daughter's account, I found somebody who she was following that had almost every video was about, you know, alcohol, mixing alcohol as like a mixologist. For a, you know, 16-year-old girl, that's not an appropriate person for her to be following. So we removed that person from her follow list. And that's just one example. But when you are already on the app and then you do together look at it, you have credibility. And that's important because you want your kids to believe that you have familiarity with this world that they're operating in. And the only way to do it is for you to join the social media apps yourself.
Yeah. There's warnings now. There's a super popular video that hit Netflix that everybody was watching. This book that you're writing and your voice that's out there warning people, it's got to still feel like with you having done all this research that there's just millions and millions of people on the Titanic and the Titanic's going down. And because it just feels like as a whole, this is where society is heading. Do you think that, and this is just speculation, do you think there'll be a time in our culture where we actually start to see in a disastrous way the fruit of a whole generation being raised up on social media? And then we start to really, okay, now we all get it. They've been warning us all this time. Like, do you think there'll be a recentering with culture thinking, man, I can't believe that we used to function that way. We really got to change this around.
I don't know. I wish I had a crystal ball, but that's a really insightful question because, I mean, we're already seeing, and I want to talk about the good of social media too. We've sort of been focusing on the bad and negative, but there's good to it as well. But I think the net, what we're seeing is that social media, because of the way the algorithms currently are, and the companies can change the algorithms like whenever they want, but they currently amplify videos that get more views, more rewatches. People watch it again. People watch the video all the way through to completion. This shows it has a higher view rate. Why are these videos getting higher view rates? There's something that's unique about it. There's something that's extreme about it that, or it hasn't been shown before, and extreme views. So politically, you know, the more extreme views and opinions get more amplification because they're more extreme, right? By definition. And so what social media has been shown to now have done is actually polarize us more from each other. So in a way, in that respect, anti-social is kind of the way social media is now. Even it's bred more distrust among people with institutions, more distrust people now have with government than ever before because of those effects. So, but down the road, will we, or a lot of people, you know, have a collective wakening up and realize, oh my gosh, like we have to really get off the apps or take a big step back from them. I don't know. Again, because of they're right now designed to be so addictive and they really are effective at that. You know, it's like, you know, if somebody's addicted to heroin, can you rationalize with that person? You know, right. It's pretty challenging. It's right. Pretty challenging.
You know, the polarizing, I thought about this and I mean, that's so right. Like I think of when I was young, just barely, but I could have like I was raised Southern, just ultra conservative. And, like I said, just barely, but I could still have someone that's a Democrat or liberal in a category of good in my head. Like if I got to know the person, like it's not like my parents said all of those people that vote that way is bad. But nowadays, like let's just take a conservative kid or a more liberal kid whose parents are kind of on the other side of the spectrum. And they're basically being raised and trained just to write them off, cancel them just because of who they're affiliated with. Whereas some of these are good people. They just don't agree. And they may be wrong on some things. You're probably wrong on some things, but we're not talking the heart of a person right now. Like I never thought about how many kids probably have their parents in like this canceled frame of mind in their head because that's the woke thing to do.
Yeah. And the cancel culture, the woke aspects of social media have definitely had, you know, big ripple effects from that point of view. And I was only one of two people on my college debate team at UCLA who was not pre-law, right? I was pre-med. My other buddy, Ari Gelper, was a, you know, business major. And so I learned early on about the importance of looking at both sides of an issue, because that's what you have to do when you're on the debate team and come up with what you feel is the truth. But you have to still be open to listening to the other side.
No.
And so
you're kidding me.
Yeah. And no, that's a renegade concept. Art. That's a renegade concept now, like to be open to listening to the other side. And even you see a lot of college campuses that don't even allow alternative views for whatever their inclination is to be on campus now. You know, a lot of speakers are getting canceled on both sides, you know, of the political spectrum and other issues too that they're speaking about. So, you know, college campuses used to be the safe haven for free speech, but sadly, that's not the case for a lot of the campuses now. So another message in the book is about critical thinking. Well, my dedication in part was to my college debate teacher and coach because of that important lesson. So there's some strong messaging about critical thinking skills, which, you know, for teenagers who are reading the book, that's a very important thing for them to hear early on in their life about critical thinking, listen to both sides of an issue, and then make your decision, make up your mind, and not just shut somebody down just because you disagree with them from the outset.
I love what I'm hearing. I haven't heard, like, basically we're all getting the messages of the, this is bad for their mental health, bad for their anxiety. This is, you know, this is why we're seeing so many kids isolating and all of that. You're covering that territory, but you're also going into areas of thought that I just never even thought about as far as just how it magnifies, you know, the polarization. There's a quote in the promo that says something along the lines of, you know, this could be more dangerous than a gun. And I'm curious, like, where are you coming from with that? And I think I know, and I have some follow-up questions about the whole telling people where you live and that sort of thing.
Well, sure, because a lot of times people might post when they're on vacation, you know, that they're on vacation in some exotic place. And if somebody's looking at the accounts, they'll first of all realize, oh, they're not home. So people's homes have been burglarized because of that. People don't think about that, but that can happen. Now, sometimes, you know, people or kids, teenagers might get lured in with somebody who they're trusting to give where they live. And some people have been attacked or even killed because of giving out personal location information. And then there's another aspect that cults are actually alive and well on social media. And people have a very hard time identifying them as cults, because it's not like, you know, you're walking through, you know, an airport and you see people that look like, you know, they're Hare Krishnas. You know, it's not like that on social media. And that's, in fact, why I have a whole chapter, an entire chapter called Clicks and Cults, for parents to understand how to identify if their kids could be following somebody who is part of a cult. And there have been some pretty bad effects. There was actually, in terms of being, you know, worse than a gun, there was a Bangladesh influencer on TikTok who lured many girls to try out for videos, but he ended up actually using them and putting them into a sex ring. And abducting them and moving them across borders. Yeah. And he's in jail now. And I write about that in the book as well. So that's where, you know, things, you know, he looked like a fun playboy dancing around on his like TikTok videos. And he's got hundreds of thousands of followers. But he was a rock star in Bangladesh, for example. He actually had really sinister motives. And he's in jail right now. But then there's also the influence of, you know, kids doing really stupid stuff and following trends that, you know, are dangerous because it's a trend. And, you know, there's one example of a girl who wrote her name on a mirror in the bathroom and rubbing alcohol and then lit it on fire. That was a trend. Well, unfortunately, the fumes of the alcohol, rubbing alcohol bottle in the room basically ignited. So it was like basically she was inside basically a alcohol vapor chamber in the closed bathroom. Everything ignited, including her clothes. And she, you know, has had serious burns with multiple surgeries. And unfortunately, she's probably going to be disfigured from following a trend that was not a smart thing to do. And there's other examples of kids dying because they followed trends. So that's also how it can be worse than a gun.
Yeah. And then,
but I think we should talk about some of the positives, because I don't want this to seem like it's just one-sided.
Sure. Let's do that. But the last thing I wanted to run by you, and I obviously have my many failings as a parent, and I'll probably find out more ways in which I failed on the other side of it. But I am trying to think of certain things like, okay, what have I not taught my kids practically that they need to know? And one thing that I have been really instilling in them, especially my oldest two girls, is just how sacred your social security number is. And, you know, basically if somebody calls you and ends up asking for your social, you can call BS on it. You know, if you call a bank to set up an account and they need your social, that's, you know, kind of a different story. But there's got to be tons of kids growing up without that knowledge, and they might just think their social is just like your last name. Oh yeah, here's my social.
Yeah. Or giving credit card information, you know, from people that just have gained their trust, you know, through DMing them back and forth. It's very easy. Again, kids are more susceptible to this. Teenagers are more susceptible than adults because their brains are still forming, and the higher, you know, the cortex in the brain is still sort of evolving until about, you know, the mid-20s. Age 25 is generally when it's kind of the concrete's cured, so to speak. And then they've got their full level of higher level functioning and decision-making skills.
Yep. All right. So tell us the good that you found.
Well, certainly there's a lot of great entertainment on social media. A lot of very creative people make funny videos. You know, you could spend hours and hours literally just losing yourself just watching funny videos, right? Dog videos, cat videos, just people doing fun stuff. So the entertainment value, you know, is really strong with social media. The research value, there is a lot of good information that people do post that is valid and not misinformation. It's not part of that epidemic of misinformation. And so social media is becoming a little bit like a new search engine. So TikTok, Instagram, a lot of people will search instead of Google for information and get good quality information from creators and influencers that are reputable and have established themselves as being so over the years. Another good aspect is that if somebody has a common interest, you know, one of the influencers who I interviewed for the book, because I interviewed 15 other influencer friends of mine, he grew up in a community where there was nobody like him in a smaller town. You know, on social media, though, he could very easily and quickly find his tribe, so to speak, and find people who were like him or similar interests, for example. It's a balance, and it's like anything in life. There's a balanced way to use it in a constructive, healthy way as we live our lives with it. Because as I said, it's not going away. And in fact, that's why, you know, I have that one chapter, the whole entire chapter is just all about these tools. We've talked about some of them, and chapters called Living with Social Media that's in that book, Influenced.
Yeah. It's interesting to think of the future of all this and what that could mean. It's almost something that I don't want to speculate.
Well, there's even a very end is like what the influencers I interviewed think the future is going to look like. So actually do some crystal ball predictions.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. We'll make them get the book for that. What comes to mind for me when it comes to the good of social media is the ability to really rally around a situation and help, you know, like, hey, y'all may not know this, but so-and-so, you know, your old classmate is going through such and such and you got a GoFundMe. And then along those same lines are just reconnecting with people that outside of social media, there's just no chance in hell that we would have ever reconnected, you know, with some of these people that we get to rekindle a friendship with. And those are the good ones for me.
Yeah,
but it seems like it's causing more harm than good, though.
I think when Mark Zuckerberg came out with Facebook originally, that's what the intent was, what you just described. And of course, it's evolved into something, you know, much bigger than that, much different than that.
So I do want to wrap it up here. How are you doing things differently with your daughters?
So because of my unique situation, being an influencer who had my addiction phase, we had a role reversal, like they were the grown-ups and I was the child for a period of time. So they've actually never generally had an issue with social media because of the experience with me. So, but that's rather unique compared to other parents and their kids.
Yeah, that does sound so. Well, hey, thank you so much. We'll definitely get word out about this book, put in the show notes, and congratulations on the accomplishment. And thank you for helping parents like me who didn't do all the research. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And also people can grab a copy of the book on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. It's in every bookstore. And for people who prefer to listen to books, it's on Audible. I actually read and recorded it in the studio. So
awesome.
There's a little bit of a personal, more close connection when people want to get Audible because of how I read the book there in the studio.
Awesome. Well, you got a calming voice, so that that may be the route to go. Awesome. Cool, man. Do you prefer people to... Hey, Rosa, will you pick Waylon up, please?